Welcome back to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. You may not think of yourself as having a close personal relationship with Albert Einstein or the theory of relativity, which turns 100 this year, but you may be a lot tighter with groundbreaking physics than you think. Of all the things that Einstein's theory made possible, like lasers and nuclear warheads, few affect our everyday lives like GPS.
Take a left on Einstein Drive.
Hiawatha Bray wrote the book on our eternal quest to figure out where the heck we are. It's called You Are Here, From the Compass to GPS, The History and Future of How We Find Ourselves. He's also a tech columnist for the Boston Globe. Hiawatha, thanks for sitting down with me.
Glad to be here.
So how does, first of all, GPS connect to the work that Albert Einstein did?
Well, it sort of snuck up on people, although a few, I think, of the scientists working early on had some idea that this was going to be important. See, of course, the whole idea of GPS is that you put atomic clocks in satellites orbiting the planet. And what a GPS signal is actually broadcasting down from space is a time signal. It's basically saying, here's what time it is on this satellite here. Here's what time it is on this satellite here, and so on. And you need four of these signals. And each satellite is also telling you its position in space. And the chip inside the phone takes that information about where the satellite is, combines it with the time at which the signal was sent versus the time at which it was received. And it does that for four different satellites, and it uses that to basically triangulate where that particular GPS receiver is. This all first starts with Sputnik. The Russians launched Sputnik, and these guys at Johns Hopkins started thinking, gee, you know, Sputnik is broadcasting radio signals. I bet you we could figure out its exact location by just calculating the Doppler effect from the radio signal that we were getting. And they did, and they figured it out, and their boss was a consultant for the U.S. Navy, and he said, why don't you work the problem in reverse? Then we could figure out exactly where a ship was at sea just by listening to the radio signal. And they tried it, and it worked, and it ended up creating a satellite system, the first satellite navigation system, which was called Transit and was used by the U.S. Navy to help ships find their way around.
So all of a sudden you went from kind of knowing where ships are to exactly knowing where every ship
is. Fairly close. That's right. Within, a few thousand feet of where the ship was.
That's a very big difference,
right? That's a very big difference. But transit was extremely limited. You had to wait till the satellite was overhead. Mm-hmm. It was useless for giving you altitude information. It couldn't tell you how high up or down you are. A bunch of people wanted to come up with something a lot more precise, and they had to basically build in a sort of Einsteinian fudge factor into the time signal that they were getting from each satellite to take into account the relativistic effects of gravity and the speed of motion of the satellite. And it comes to about 38 microseconds, and that's the difference that in the time settings that we get from these satellites that are beaming down to us. They're off, quote-unquote, by about 38 microseconds, but they're not really off because that's how much of a difference there is in the speed time is moving up there.
Einsteinian fudge factor. I'm going to start working that into the things I do. It's a fudge factor, but it's Einsteinian.
It's an Einsteinian
factor.
And they had to do that because if you were off by just a few microseconds, that would completely screw up the accuracy of GPS calculations, and you wouldn't be able to get within, like, even a cheap consumer GPS device is going to get you to within about 20 feet of anywhere you want to be anywhere on Earth.
Right.
And there are ultra-accurate GPS systems these days that can actually get down to, like, centimeter accuracy.
Whoa.
Oh, they're amazingly accurate things. They do it for architecture and for agriculture and things like that. I mean, you now have GPS-guided tractors that are sitting there figuring out exactly how to put the corn down in rows. It's just amazing how precise it is.
So, as you're saying, GPS is now everywhere. It's, you know, on that phone I saw you put in your pocket a few minutes ago.
Yep.
It's everywhere. How did it go from being something that a few people had figured out, used in a military way, to just being pervasive?
Oh, well, that was the fault of a number of people who died in horrible accidents, actually. No, what it really was that, because the FCC back in the late 90s realized that people were shifting to handheld mobile phones. Even that early, they could see that the landline telephone was basically going away. Now, for many years, even then, we'd had this whole thing of 911 where you pick up the phone, and it automatically looks up the location from which the call is coming, which is relatively easy if you have have a fixed landline phone. This number is located at such and such a place, so we know where to go.
Right.
How do you do that when the phone's mobile?
That's fascinating.
And they realized, we've got to figure out a way to do that. And they ordered the cell phone industry by, I think it was the year 2000. They were a little late in finishing it, but around the year 2000, they were all supposed to have built into the phones a way to find everybody when somebody dialed 911.
So this wasn't Apple saying, you know what would be really cool? I mean, this was the government saying,
Apple?
This is what you have to do.
Apple.
Well, you know, whatever.
Apple.
Everybody's Samsung,
got this
Motorola.
Thing that Apple does everything first. Apple was late to the party.
Hmm.
The first Apple iPhone didn't even have GPS. It was really remarkable. It's kind of interesting in a way because they came back and did something almost as clever in a bid to make up for it. The thing is, what happened was GPS begins appearing on phones early in the last decade. And it was at first just used for emergency purposes.
Okay.
But it didn't take the phone companies long to figure out, hey, wait a minute. Why don't we just let our customers use it, too? Why don't we write apps that'll run on phones and stuff? And we're not talking about smartphones, either. If you remember those old-fashioned flip phones?
I do.
It started to appear on those. I had one of the early flip phones that had this thing called, it was Verizon VZ Navigator. And it was just, it looked very crude by the standards of Google Maps, but it worked great. And you whipped out your phone, you said, I want to go to 123 Elm Street, and it told you how to get there. It used the GPS chip in the phone. And it didn't cost anything. This was the moment where GPS really explodes. Because when the FCC mandates that you have to build this technology into every phone, all of a sudden these companies like Qualcomm are building it right into the chipset. It costs next to nothing once they start to mass produce it. Remember when GPS units cost thousands of dollars? They were handheld devices and only soldiers or fanatical hunters carried them around? Once they started mass producing them and building them into phones, everybody had them.
Okay, so the other side of the government saying, hey, we want to help you out. We want to figure out where your 911 location is. You got to put this in the phone, is that the government also, for whatever other purposes, you know, can know where you are because of GPS. I mean, it depends on, you know, whether the cell phone company share, right, the records.
Well, sometimes they're sharing whether they like it or not.
That's right. Now, how do you feel about that? Because there's obviously, from that phone in your pocket, in my pocket, there's a lot about us that is known to a lot of people, maybe not even people we realize know it.
Oh, absolutely. And it's very disturbing and very concerning. It's not just that. It's everywhere. We're now living in a world where, for a variety of reasons, not just GPS, but the very fact that almost anything you use electronic has some record of the fact that you've used it.
Right.
You drive down the street and you drive past a toll booth. It knows it was you who drove past that toll booth.
Yeah.
Increasingly, police agencies and others, and it's not just police, there are actually private companies that have set up license plate trackers for things like, you know, doing repos on cars. You drive down the street and somebody photographs your car's license plate. Mm. And it's not so much that, it's the fact that they can keep that record for years. Imagine being able to follow people retroactively. Imagine a police department that has kept a record of all the license plates of all the cars that were driving down the road on May the 4th, 2012. They can go back and decide they want to follow you and what you were doing on 2012. And at that time, they didn't have any reason to follow you around.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know you were suspect. But now they can go back in time and follow the movements of your car. And that raises real privacy issues.
Does that to you say, well, for all the good that GPS is, here's kind of an issue with it?
Oh, well, no, I don't know anybody who would want to be bereft of GPS. It has been an amazing technical breakthrough. The problem here isn't the technology. We have got to figure out how to build hedges around the way it's used. I just want to make it clear that we're not just talking about GPS. I don't want to limit it to that. It's this whole concept, as we're now hearing, about the Internet of Things. One of the fundamental problems with the Internet of Things is it means that basically every device you have becomes a tracking device because you turn it on, it knows you turned it on at such and such a time. That means you now know, here's where this person was. Here's what he was doing at that time, and so on. We better figure that out.
Now, do you ever feel like you said you're a big fan of GPS. Do you ever feel like we're overly reliant on GPS? I mean, sometimes when I go on a trip, I try hard not to use GPS because I feel like I walk around in a haze of being told where to go, and I never really figure out the lay of the land where I am, like what that city looks like. So anyway, I don't know.
I have mixed feelings about it. I don't have that problem exactly because, yes, I look at what the GPS device is telling me, but I'm also looking at the world around me and trying to get a feel for it. I don't just want to rely on GPS. But of course that's a problem. It's a problem. Countless examples of this. That is, again, you got to focus on the larger problem, which is that we become so reliant on our machines that we do indeed begin to lose touch with skills, ideas, values that are important. There have been two recent major airplane crashes where apparently what happened is that the pilot spent so much time flying the plane on autopilot, basically, that when a machine on board, when a device malfunctioned, they weren't sure how to react. The classic, you know, Air France, the Air France plane. They lost their airspeed indicator, and they didn't know what to do. And the guy pulls the plane into a stall, and it crashes into the Atlantic.
They should have added practice.
All he had to do was just follow some very basic procedures on how to deal with the loss of the airspeed indicator. The plane would have been fine. Heck, it probably would have been fine if he just kept his hands off the controls. But he didn't know what to do because he was out of practice.
Mm-hmm.
To give a more down-to-earth example, did you hear about this a few weeks ago? A man, his wife was killed. The man was seriously injured. They were following their GPS. They were driving through an area in northeast Indiana just outside of Chicago. They drove right up over a bridge that was uncompleted or was in the process of being torn down and drove right off the edge and fell about 30 feet to the pavement below. Because they actually drove around barriers and signs telling them, don't go here.
They trusted the GPS more than the signs.
They followed the GPS more than the signs and drove right off the edge. They were convinced they had to do what the machine told them to do. There is a certain amount of concern that if you're not using machines in a conscious and deliberate fashion, machines can make you stupid. And there is some evidence of that happening. On a simpler level, I don't want to get as far as like the Google makes you stupid argument that some people say, but there is a risk. Because what happens is you go online and you read something that is served up to you by a computer and you think you know what it means. And you don't really understand it. You're just reading this little chunk of something. And that's fine if you know what you don't know. But if you begin to believe that you really understand something because you read a few words about it on Google, that can get us in trouble.
So where does GPS head? What is like next? Are there people somewhere in some lab cooking up the next iteration of GPS that we kind of haven't seen?
Well, there are all kinds of things going on. I mean, there are efforts to try to use more, you know, terrestrial radio inside buildings. There's a lot of effort, for example, you know, if you're in a shopping mall, there are lots of businesses in there that are using Wi-Fi, and there are companies that are trying to use the Wi-Fi signal in there to let you draw electronic maps so you can get turn-by-turn directions of what's inside the mall or what's inside the airport. They're working on that. There are people working on new GPS systems all the time. Russia's got a system called GLONASS, and most GPS-enabled phones nowadays use both. So you're not just getting the American GPS signal, you're getting the Russian GLONASS signal. So there's this...
Does that mean the Russians know where we are, too?
No.
Okay, checking.
No, let's not be paranoid here, because that is actually one of the coolest things about the technology of GPS. GPS system doesn't know anything about you. All it does is it beams a signal that says, here's where we are. And your device, whatever it is, uses those signals to calculate where you are. One of the best things about GPS is that it isn't really a privacy threat, per se. Because if you're just using, quote-unquote, pure GPS, you're not telling anybody where you are. You are able to find out where you are without telling anybody else where you are. But on the other hand, if you've got a phone, like whenever you turn on your phone, like an Android or an Apple, it says, do you want to use our location services?
It sure does. Yeah.
Bingo. And the minute you turn that on, now you're telling Apple where you are.
Right.
Or you're telling Google where you are. But you can run them. Well, now you can't. Actually, if you turn off their location services, your GPS stops working.
Right. So they
won't let you do it.
Right.
But you could buy a pure GPS device that doesn't say anything to anybody and will just tell you where you are. You can get that.
Hiawatha Bray is a technology columnist for the Boston Globe. He's the author of You Are Here, From the Compass to GPS, the History and Future of How We Find Ourselves. Hiawatha, thank you.
Thank you.
The world of science is my game. Albert Einstein is my name. I was born in Germany. Happy to